Welcome to the special edition of the Uptime Wind Energy Podcast. I'm your host, Alan Hall, along with my co-host, Joel Saxham. This podcast has an interesting story behind it. Our first guest today is Candace Wood, Chief Operating Officer at Everpoint Services, which is based in Texas. Candace purchased the Little Pringle Wind Farm at an auction. Little Pringle Wind Farm is outside Amarillo, Texas, and buying a wind farm at auction doesn't happen very often. And this is where the story takes an interesting turn. Candace and Everpoint made a decision about how to use this wind farm. Everpoint connected with the Idaho National Laboratory cybersecurity experts to use a portion of the turbines for cybersecurity research and testing. So from the Idaho National Lab is Michael McCarty, who is a cybersecurity research specialist, and Megan Culler, who is a power engineer specializing in cybersecurity and resiliency, also from the Idaho National Laboratory. Megan, Michael, and Candace, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
All right. So let's start off with Little Pringle and figure out how Candace ended up buying a wind farm. So you were at an auction, right, Candace? Can you describe what happened where you decided like to put down some money on a wind farm?
So Everpoint Services, we are a end of life services company for renewables. So we primarily focus on decommissioning and demolition of wind turbines as well as solar assets. And we'd heard about this wind farm that had been abandoned since about 2017, a small farm, you know, 10 units originally, 2 megawatts each, and heard that it was going up for auction. The county had seized the asset to try and recover some back taxes. So I tuned into the auction really with the intention of finding out who was going to purchase it and then pitching our services to them. Like, hey, we can come in and you know, help you cut these things down. So I'm listening to the auction and the price point is going once, going twice. And I'm thinking, gosh, that's really not a lot of money. I mean, we're talking, you know, five figures. And I thought, well, let me just throw out a bid there and see what happens. So I threw out a bid that was just slightly above what was about to be the winning bid. And lo and behold, I won. I bought the wind farm. So it was, you know, kind of a somewhat impulsive decision, which was both terrifying and exciting, you know, in the immediate aftermath. What was interesting was once we looked into it a little bit more, we discovered that the interconnection agreement at the site was still in good standing. And so once I actually finally got out there to look at it, because I did purchase the site unseen, I'd never actually looked at it before. Once we got out there and looked at it, I thought, you know, well, these turbines, they're not in such terrible condition, all things considered. And so we started looking into, okay, well, what could we do? Maybe did we want to repower it? And that led us down the path of looking for funding sources, which led us to the government, a lending program within the government. They said, well, you know, if you don't want to borrow $100 million or more, we really aren't interested. But we know these guys over at Idaho National Labs who've been looking for a wind farm to do some cybersecurity testing on. They might be interested in what you have going on there. So that was kind of how we ended up getting linked up with Idaho National Labs.
Candace, when you get to the site and you've taken a look at these wind turbines, they are functional still?
No. Several towers had blades that were broken off. Kind of one of the first orders of business was to actually get out there and clean up some of the blade debris that had fallen down into the landowner's fields so that they could plant in the spring. And so, no, it was not functioning. But, you know, having a background in construction and wind, you know, I climbed one of the towers and kind of said, well, you know, the bolts seem to be holding together pretty well. And the towers that have the blades on them, you know, seem to be mostly intact. Aside from a lot of dust, the other primary issue was that the copper pirates had gotten in there and cut out most of the cabling, the medium voltage cabling. And so that's the main hurdle in getting the site back up and running. And so that's what we've been working with INL on, is to secure some funding so that we can actually go in, rewire several of the towers, get them back up and running so that they can try and hack into them.
My mind switches to a bunch of things, right? So you stumbled upon this auction. The interconnection agreement, unbeknownst to you at the time, is still in place. Great. right? I'm thinking, man, could it be, you know, could it be repurposed? Could it be behind the meter green hydrogen? Could we put energy back into the grid? To my understanding, these are DeWinn turbines, right?
They are. DeWinn, which is no longer in existence.
Yeah, and tough to, you know, I mean, spare parts, anything's going to have to be custom built. It's not like you just walk, it's not like it's a GE15 and you call your neighbor wind farm and say like, hey, do you got some brakes or you got some bearings? Or apparently, do you have some medium voltage cabling that we can borrow? You guys don't have that capability. So joining up with the Idaho National Labs, I mean, there's two really cool things about that to me. So it's someone that they have a project, right? They have something that they want to do. They want to do something that will better the wind industry as a whole. You have the assets. So it seems like it's kind of a really good marriage of someone who needs something, someone who has something, right? So when you first engage with the Idaho National Lab, how did that conversation go? Was it like, hey, we've have these things, what do you guys want to do? Or did you guys kind of have a plan in mind and then it switched? Or how does that process look like?
And maybe Michael can elaborate more, but my understanding was they had tried to pursue this project topic at a different wind farm asset site, but ran into some issues with the ownership. And as you can imagine, probably most owner operators are not too keen to have somebody come in and try and hack into their, you know, functioning wind turbines. And so we were kind of in a unique position where, you know, we own the site outright. We're not overly concerned about running them because they're not currently running. And so I think in our initial conversation, we both realized, hey, this might actually work.
So Michael, then you guys get engaged with EverPoint. You now have these assets, these 10 turbines that are in various states of disrepair. We got to get them up and running and stuff. So immediately you guys are thinking, hey, this is the project that we want to do. Let's go and attack it. So what is that project? What is it that you guys are working on?
So the project that we're working on here at the Idaho National Laboratory is we're basically taking the wind turbines and we're going to get them operational, or, you know, as close to operational as we can. So the blades spin and that sort of thing, you know, maybe they're not producing energy at 100%, but we're going to get them operational, and then we want to assess the whole security stance, the security posture of the wind turbine, and see where and how we could poke that to cause possible physical damage. A bit similar to the Aurora experiment, if you're familiar with that. So we want to see basically the places that cyber can interface with the physical portions of the nacelle, the tower, the inverter, if there's an inverter, you know, connecting back to the grid, and then see what can we actually do that. And if we can do that, what sort of mitigations could we put in place to stop that from happening in real life.
So can you walk us through that Aurora generator? I think it was a diesel generator test, right? Just so that the listeners kind of know what that is.
Yeah, it's on the internet quite a bit. I think there's like a Wikipedia page about it. But basically, it was a destructive test. So they wanted to see if the safety measures had been removed from some electronic component in a large diesel generator, what would happen? You know, like, would it smoke, you know, would it blow up, would it catch fire? And it pretty much did those things. So you remove the safety measures, right, from the electronic components. And so when it's supposed to fail and fail safe, it doesn't fail safe. You know, it fails the worst way possible because of specifically a cyber component.
If I can add, I would just say that with that diesel generator test, what they did was through digital means connected and disconnected it from the grid rapidly, so that it was out of sync with the actual grid. So if you think about two things that are typically spinning together, they made the generator spin differently, which of course does not make the generator components very happy. And so that's where the actual smoking and physical damage came from.
Okay, that makes absolute sense. So this is becoming more and more of something that's very important to our society in general for grid resiliency, energy security in general, right? So it makes sense that Idaho National Labs has a bit of a budget to explore these things. I was at an insurance conference last year, and one of the big new topics was cyber insurance, right? So it was basically pandering to wind farm owners and insurance brokers. Hey, you guys need to have these policies in place because these things can happen. They have, right? In the news, I think it was last year, Alan, correct me if I'm wrong, but where there was like a cyber attack and they shut down one of the pipelines going towards the over on the East Coast.
Yeah, down in North Carolina.
Yeah, so and it like changed fuel delivery, fuel prices, all kinds of stuff. So like that was that's one incident. If more and more of these incidents are happening, or if you have like Megan, like you said, you have 100 turbine wind farm and you start cycling on these turbines on and off and on and off, as opposed to how, you know, the grid frequencies that they're supposed to run at, you can damage inverters, you could do things. I know a really cheesy, simple one when you talk about damage is if you could get into a turbine and hit the emergency stop remotely, you can do, you know, irreparable damage to the blades just by doing that.
There have been several notable incidents that have affected wind organizations as well. Several ransomware events against wind companies in Europe, as well as an attack on satellite infrastructure in Europe that was not targeted at wind infrastructure, but happened to take out the remote communications for 5,800 Enercon wind turbines. And because of the method of that attack, they actually had to physically go out and replace the modems and all of those turbines, which took almost 2 months for them to do. So not a physical impact in that case. The wind turbines were still producing energy, but no remote monitoring was possible during that time.
So, Michael, what are some of the things that you're going to try to attack on a wind turbine in particular, and what would be the simple way to prevent them? Because it's right now, like we're talking about DeWind wind turbines, right, which are an older wind turbine, but the technology internal to those wind turbines hasn't changed a lot, probably until 2015 or so, where the OEM started paying attention to cybersecurity. I know they're going to not like me saying that, but that's pretty much the case. What are those weak points, and not to give out national security risk, but like, what should we be looking for here?
The weak points that we're looking for specifically are, you know, any sort of remote connectivity is normally part of your attack surface. And so you want to go in, and if there's something like basically a VPN connection, a cellular modem, or some other way to connect in from remotely, that's your first point of contact with them. And then once you go in, there's some servers, there's some computers connected in on the other side of the turbine, and from there you can control the PLCs, which control the, you know, the pitch of the blades and things like that. Specifically, some of the scenarios that we were looking at to cause physical damage were things like a tower strike. You know, if the blades, if they're spinning fast enough and they get caught in the wind just the right way, they can actually strike the tower. We're looking at that. Basic overheating sort of scenarios where, you know, something is just overused or used to the point to which it starts to break down, but whatever sort of safety systems or monitoring systems that are in place don't relay that information back. So, you know, maybe we just tell a piston to just go, you know, in and out for, you know, over and over again, but we don't relay that information back anywhere. And so nobody knows it's happening, and that piston uses like, you know, 10 years of its lifetime overnight or something like that. And ultimately, I mean, we don't really know. So we've got some scenarios that we've laid out, but this is the experiment, is to actually get down there and try and do it. Because sometimes you tabletop specific scenarios and then turns out they're not really that big of a deal, you know. So you want to actually test it.
One of the things that pops in my mind here is I think probably the angle Alan was going down is this is a DeWind turbine. So if you're to be successful or not, however these experiments is, you know, kind of roll out, however these tests go, people may say like, oh, well, it's cool, but you did it on a DeWind turbine. Try to do that to a GE or a Vestas, or try to do that through XYZ company's controller or XYZ company's security mechanisms of sorts. So will you be testing other things from the marketplace, or like, you know, retrofit materials or anything like that?
Yes, absolutely. So one of the large parts of the experiment is we're going to test what we can do, and then we're going to modernize a few of the components, or at least, you know, put like a different aggregator, different PLCs, you know, company XYZ, newer components, because these are older DE Wind components that have They do have security. I've looked at it already, and they do have firewalls and stuff like that. But as we add newer components, we'll see how those newer components actually stop this attack from happening. And the idea is we'll have multiple different topologies. So the topology where it's your old 2017 architecture, and then a topology where it's slightly modified, slightly better, you know, with a few things removed to make it more secure. And then we'll have a topology where it's completely secured 100% with our, you know, our partners, our security partners, and those sorts of things implemented in the environment. And so this will be the more secure environment that an attacker wouldn't be able to penetrate without setting off lots of bells and alarms. And then we'll compare all three topologies so that WinFarms can use that documentation and use that report to see, well, if I added this, you know, how much would it help my security posture?
There's a number of terminals in the United States are reaching sort of that 10-year time span. We're going to be repowered. And while they're going through that repowering effort, now's the time to update their cybersecurity for sure. What simple things should they be doing when they're if they're upgrading an existing turbine or replacing it? What should they be looking for?
From a security, a cybersecurity perspective, it's always good to have some sort of alarm system. There's newer technologies. You know, I hate to mention specific vendor names and that sort of thing, but there's newer technologies out that help to take out the security, the need for security personnel, and offset that to other services where basically you just install their device and they will monitor your system and let you know if something goes wrong. So there's not really that much of a requirement of standing up a whole security team or, you know, training everyone as far as how to secure their Win site. But some basic things are just network intrusion detection systems. So you want something on your network that will alert if anything bad happens. Generally, even this 2017 system is pretty locked down. It's got firewalls and stuff. But if anything goes wrong, there's nothing to tell you. There's nothing to tell you if somebody's poking around. But the basics are network intrusion detection systems and host intrusion detection systems, which the host intrusion detection systems are what runs on the actual any servers, any Windows machines, any HMIs running on the wind turbine. It has its own kind of built-in. If you poke at it, it will set off an alarm. And then you have the network intrusion detection systems, where if there's somebody new on the network, it automatically sends out an alarm. Those are some basic measures that they could add.
Do we have a sense of how many networks have been intruded in the wind industry at the moment? Let's just say the United States. Do you have a general sense of that?
I can speak to a couple of specific incidents. For the most part, what we're seeing is that wind farms are being affected, and in some cases have actually been physically affected by cyber attacks, but they're usually not the primary target, or maybe not a target at all. One example is an incident that was reported where a technician, like a traveling technician, maintenance person who worked on multiple wind farms, you know, stayed in a hotel overnight, downloaded malware onto his laptop by accident, through that hotel Wi-Fi, went to work the next day, plugged his laptop in to start doing maintenance on the turbines, and they started shutting down one by one. I don't know the exact details of that, but if I had to make a guess, it would be something that it was like a, you know, an operating system type of malware. And if those turbines happened to be using Windows controllers or something like that, that it was an aggressive malware that spread through that and shut down the operating systems. So something that's targeting wind, no, but potential impact, yes. Same thing with the denial of service attack that happened in Utah, where a known vulnerability in a Cisco firewall was exploited that caused that firewall to reboot repeatedly over a 12-hour period. And each reboot took about 5 minutes. And so communications were lost during each one of those reboot periods. And that network, that firewall, was sitting on a network that included some wind assets and solar assets. But I don't want to spread fear. I still don't think that most attackers are going after wind because it's wind yet.
Yeah, that's why we're doing this, right? We have EverPoint's got these assets. We're utilizing them as an industry to test against this stuff so we can be resilient against stuff that may happen in the future. So I guess that brings me to another question, Candace. This one for you. Right now, the idea with Idaho National Labs is we're going to test a bunch of cybersecurity protocols, equipment, see what could happen. But could you use, or are you going to use these assets at Little Pringle for anything else? Like, I know we had talked a little bit about testing some other equipment out there.
Yeah. So we do actually get a lot of inquiries from folks who are interested in testing, their new, their prototype for, blade inspections or, XYZ. We're also starting to look into potentially adding some battery storage out there. And then, there's also kind of follow-on potential for also testing some grid resilience, the actual interconnection to the grid. Little Pringle is kind of our R&D playground. Welcome opportunities to do this type of testing out there, because I do think it is a unique situation that we have, and it will help the industry overall as a whole. So even though EverPoint primarily focuses on decommissioning and demolition, we are still interested in making sure that the industry is robust and moving in the right direction.
We plan on setting up this experiment as something that multiple people can use. So your network intrusion detection companies, your host intrusion detection companies, if they want to showcase their software or their abilities, this will be kind of like a playground for them to come in and test, because nothing like this exists anywhere else. Nowhere else can you go and get a real turbine and install your software and collect your data and see what's going on.
That makes infinite sense. And I was just thinking about, and Joel and I were talking about conditioning monitoring systems and things that plug into the turbine as maybe being that vulnerability point. So if you do have those systems, there's a lot of companies making these systems today that do plug into SCADA. It would make sense to work with Idaho National Labs to find out if your system is as robust as you think that it is, because it does matter, right? You'd hate to get 10,000 systems in service and realize you have a cybersecurity defect that needs to be addressed. Now's the time to deal with it. And that's why Idaho National Lab exists, right?
I would point out, too, we're working with several other labs. Like, this is a multi-lab effort. So a lot of the data that we're collecting from the site is the first of its kind. Like, there isn't really a site that has had this happen that we have data from. So once we cause an event and then we collect the actual data, we can use that at other labs for training and other purposes. But we are working with NREL, we're working with Sandia National Laboratory, and in multiple projects that are stemming from this effort. And we're of course open to any other labs if they want to run their experiments, or companies that want to come in and run their experiments on our system. We're hoping it's a research environment for them.
All right. So how do we reach out to EverPoint? We got to talk to Candace first, because those are her turbines, because she won them at an auction. Candace, how do they reach out to you to connect with you and then and get on these turbines if needed?
Sure. Yeah, you can connect with me via email or our website, everpointservices.com. And there's should be a link in there just to submit a general inquiry. And that'll come to my business partner, Tyler Goodell, or myself. And we'll follow up and see what opportunities we can pursue.
And Megan, how do they get a hold of the cybersecurity experts at the Idaho National Laboratory?
You can certainly connect with us via email or LinkedIn or any one of our websites as well.
Okay, we will put those in the show notes for sure. I know this is going to drum up a lot of interest in the United States. Obviously, cybersecurity is a big item. We look at wind turbines today as national assets. And when you actually walk on a wind farm now, the training is not, the little safety briefing you get is not about putting your hard hat on and having steel-toed boots. It's also about not plugging into their network and stop screwing around to introduce some malware, right? So it has really escalated in the last couple of years. And I'm glad that the Idaho National Laboratory is involved with this. And Candace, really, thank you so much for making this possible, because you're going to make wind turbines even more resilient. It's brilliant.
Great. Thanks, guys.